sofas, recliners, love seats, everything is better in leather. Discover the new leather collection at Ashley, where bold meets durable. And wait a minute, who's been finger painting on the couch again? That's okay. Leather is easy to clean. The new leather collection at Ashley is built with the durability you need for the whole family. Yes, pets too. Luxury is meant to be livable. Shop chairs starting at $499.99 and sofas at $599.99. Ashley, for the love of home.
Jordan, okay. Now be honest with me here.
I will.
How do you really feel? The sparks are in the toilet. The season just ended. The regular season just ended. And the next morning, you wake up and Liz Cambage has just posted a photo with her butt cheeks out. This is your boy talking. I'm all for body positivity. I support the arts. When you see her with the cakes out on a cliff after one of the worst seasons, after the night after giving up a 41-9 second quarter.
That I watched in person.
One of the worst quarters of basketball ever put on film.
Ever.
And 12 hours later, Liz is letting the things loose. Are you happy when you see it?
Hello and welcome to Take Line. I'm your host, Jason Concepcion. Today, Jordan Liggins will be riding shotgun with us. Got a great show for you this week. We'll be joined by the great Jamel Johnson to talk about WNBA playoffs. Then Andrew Beaton of the Wall Street Journal will join us to react to the Cleveland Browns quarterback Deshaun Watson's 11-game suspension stemming from his stomach-churning sexual assault cases. But let's get into it. Jamel, Jordan, it's so great to see you. Before we get started, a strange thing is happening, and that is Arsenal FC, they're playing great. They're doing great. It is August, but they're doing great in a way that feels like the events of recent years have been upended. And so I'd like to talk about it with you for a little while, Jamel, and I would also like to see if we could indoctrinate Jordan.
Jordan, I know you don't.
I don't know.
You might not know what's going on. Imagine if your student loans were just forgiven out of nowhere. Yeah.
Forgiven.
Wow. Okay. This is a great day. Okay.
That's how this feels. You're just like, whoa, I never thought I would see this day.
All right.
And then it happens before your eyes.
All right. Anything with my loans forgiven, I am a fan of.
Like, legitimately, you pick up your cell phone. It's the morning, right? Your alarm goes off. You're like, what's going on? 6 a.m. You're like, I got this weird, what is this number? Voicemail? Okay, I listen to it. And it's like, hey, Jordan, what's up? It's big student loans here. You're good. So don't worry about it. We're good. I see what you're doing over there. Yeah. We can get this money. We can get this paper from other people. We don't need it from you. We're good.
Wow. 5,000 British men chant tequila in you.
Saliba. So what's going on, Jordan, is the previously in the history of the recent EPL, Arsenal FC of North London have been kind of a joke, sort of a doormat. Their longtime and iconic manager had stepped away some years ago, and that had ushered in a period of turmoil when it had become fun to make fun of this team that had fallen from such heights. They were actually not, like, they fell to eighth, which feels terrible because you're out of the money, basically. If you don't finish top four, you don't get to play in the best tournament in the world, the Champions League. And so you miss out on like millions and millions and millions of euros that you could then use to help your team. So they finished eighth, and it's not great. That's the lowest they fell. But it's been tough, and now they're back. They made some great signings, and it's a young squad that has been together a little while. And now all of a sudden, you feel like they're gelling, and it's just a fun time to root for the team. Jamel, what am I missing here?
Absolutely nothing, sir. Also, you should keep in mind that everybody on the team is like under 25. They're all cute little babies.
Little children.
Babies playing soccer.
They're babies playing soccer with adults, and they can't be stopped.
Their striker His name is spelled Jesus, but it's Jesus, Gabriel Jesus. And when I tell you that no man has ever held that name in such high esteem since the ancient days, then this man right now, Gabriel Jesus.
He is the white Jesus. He's not white, but he is the white Jesus.
Well, he's Brazilian. He's like, he's cocoa-skinned man, but absolutely...
Is what? Jesus on the back of his jersey? Because that's amazing. Yes. Okay, that's
number
awesome.
9, Jesus.
Yes!
7 was taken? Oh my God. Okay.
And on top of that, Jordan, the teams that have been dominant in recent days, many of them owned by the sovereign wealth funds of various oil-producing nations, are... if not struggling, not starting as strongly as one would expect, Chelsea, who very recently were owned by Roman Abramovich, currently under UN sanction and United States sanction due to his ties to the Vladimir Putin government in Russia, was formerly the owner of Chelsea. And they just got mollywopped 3-0 by Leeds United, managed by American Jesse March. All those Ted Lasso jokes that have been swirling around suddenly put to bed in one fell swoop.
Okay,
Jordan.
This is drama. The one thing I could get on board with is some drama. I like it.
No, hella drama. I mean, it is a drama that is on Amazon Prime that you can watch. Go ahead, throw on some all or nothing. The best comp I can give you is like, what if we were on the other side of the Sparks rebuilding already and the Sparks were really good?
Yes. Mm-hmm. All the pieces had like come together, all the struggle,
yeah,
all of that is suddenly paying dividends, and you've come out the other side, or seemingly come out the other side. And not only that, but all of that drama had been put mm-hmm. on Front Street for everyone to see, much like Arsenal's in this All or Nothing documentary. You get to see the struggles that brought us to this place. It's a great place to be, Jordan.
Wow. I'm so happy for you guys. That seems like a fun time, fun thing to celebrate. If it was the Sparks, just that thought honestly brought tears to my eyes of us being good again. That would be a wonderful sight. I can't even imagine what that day feels like. So... I'm with you.
Imagine if Jordan Canada made Team USA. Is she even American? Imagine if she missed 2 free throws to win the Olympics and then came back for the WNBA season and was unfucking stoppable.
Wow. We love a redemption arc. This is a drama show. I like
it. It's all there. It's all there.
All or nothing. It's all there. Jordan, how are you feeling about the Sparks? It's been a tumultuous... I mean, there's no way to... It's been a tumultuous several
weeks. This is how I feel about the Sparks. I've said this on other episodes,
yes,
you know, podcasts before, but I stick with it. I'm more upset at myself. And I think that's the reflection that I have to take. I look back in like March, I was high on life. I was like, we got Liz Cambage, we got Jordan Canada, we got Kennedy Carter. Like, this is gonna be the best season ever. We're back, baby. None of that happened. And we were second to dead last in the standings. And there was so many left turns. Like, Derek Fisher gets fired, which I celebrated. And then that was a good left turn.
That was a good left turn. That was a turn that had been long on the GPS. And we had been waiting for that turn.
The worst part about him getting fired was him tweeting right after and saying, you know, thanks to the Sparks organization, but I'm open to positions in the NBA and player development. So email me. And I wanted to blow up the computer. Oh, my God.
Jordan, okay. Now, be honest with me here.
I will.
How do you really feel? The Sparks are in the toilet. The season just ended. The regular season just ended. And the next morning, you wake up and Liz Cambage has just posted a photo with her butt cheeks out. This is your boy talking. I'm all for body positivity. I support the arts. when you see her with the cakes out on a cliff after one of the worst seasons, after the night after giving up a 41-9 second quarter
that I watched in person,
one of the worst quarters of basketball ever put on film,
ever.
And 12 hours later, Liz is letting the things loose. Are you happy when you see it?
I can report I'm not happy. I'm not happy. But it's what expected. She has left basketball to pursue modeling. And here's the thing. Liz Cambage doesn't like basketball. Like, she didn't seem like she was happy playing basketball.
She doesn't seem to like a lot of things.
Yeah.
And a lot of things don't seem to like her.
Exactly.
Fairly so.
Doesn't like the sport of basketball. Doesn't like the people who play basketball.
Who play basketball. It was a lot. I think that's where I blame myself, because she has shown time and time again that she is a quitter. And for me to be like, she's not going to quit on us. Like, we're the Sparks. She wanted to be in LA. We had a press conference. We rolled out the red carpet for her. And for her to just quit at a very pivotal time just speaks volumes. And everyone in the league is like, we don't want her on our team. She hasn't played two consecutive seasons for a franchise. Like, she has quit on everyone. And so I think it's just like, keep modeling. Show off your butt cheeks, because that is what brings you joy, not basketball. And for people who are Sparks fans and want to actually win, we want people on the floor that want to play basketball.
Damn, that was real.
Damn.
I felt the exhale. I could feel the wind.
That was real.
The gust coming off of that breath.
I said it
like 3 years ago. Like, she was holding the Aces down. And what I wanted to happen, I was like, they're going to trade Liz to LA for Candace. And then Vegas will finally win. But took a couple more years. But we ended up there.
Yeah, yeah. It's Vegas, I think. You are able to see what a Liz-less basketball team can accomplish. They are playing with so much joy. They are playing together. And that's the positivity of me, of like, next year we won't have that cancerous attitude in the locker room from the jump. So hopefully they can, you know, because I talk to the players all the time. They're like, it was a horrible year. Like, everybody was frustrated. Nobody liked each other. Practices were tough. We're learning new systems with the coach. And so now going into next year, they will have a new coach. It's official. And hopefully we could just get that from the jump. Everybody buying in, wanting to play basketball, wanting to win. Because I'm an LA sports fan. We win. We don't know how to lose. This is a tough time.
Perhaps this is the time for y'all to learn. I mean, it's been, I can't. Take this time and learn your lessons.
I don't want to learn those lessons.
I just want to say, the less said about Derek Fisher, the better. But I just want to say at this point, I think it's become clear to everyone that he is on top of everything else, on top of the fact that he is up to some shiesty, like, there is something grimy about this guy. That said, he's also, like, really dumb. He's also, like, not a smart man.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. You know what I mean? He had no experience coaching women's basketball. And to be handed this job with, like, a red ribbon and, like, here's the keys to a championship franchise in the Sparks was such a slap in the face. And for him to tank it and then leave and be like, yeah, you know, player development, NBA, like, if you guys want me, call me. No one's going to call you. You're terrible at coaching. You're really bad.
Game 3, Chicago, New York, this Tuesday. Shocking game 1 win. And then this guy come out and roll a monster truck over the Liberty's face. What do we expect for game 3?
It being in New York, it's tough, man. It's tough to
It's tough. I think we have to talk about the playoff format. So the new change, Now yeah, it's not single that. Elimination game, which thank God, because Chicago Sky would be out. So now great, we're going yes. in this first round, best of three. In the next two rounds, best of five. But with this best of three, the top seeded team, if it goes three, has to win on the road. What?
And that's for travel. It's like you're already making them fly commercial. Just do the right thing. Make the last game with the home court advantage.
It's not good for a Liberty team that has sold out Barclays Center. Like, their crowd is one of the best in the league. And they were probably like second quarter of their blowout loss. They were like, "Whoo, thank God we're going back home. Like, we're so excited to go back to New York."
Losing by 40 is honestly like really good. Now, and in that situation, you know, it's like, okay, put the bench in. We're getting ready for game three. We're headed home. You get another chance to play. It's almost like this 40-point drubbing didn't even happen.
Headed home is wild, and it definitely feels like one of the, you know, one of the many, like, wait, what? What are we doing? We're going to fix this, right? Like, this will be the case for this season, maybe, you know, but they got to change this. And I think everyone knows that this will change, right?
If New York wins, it's getting changed immediately. Candace Parker is going to have the amended rules in her shorts. Next year, exactly.
Because now we're at two of those scenarios. Dallas Wings also has a chance to upset Connecticut. So if either of Wednesday those teams night. Win, yep. then the rule gets changed immediately. Because if we remember last year, Chicago was 500 going into the playoffs. They won all their single elimination games to win the championship. Rule gets changed immediately, like not even when we're talking about WNBA news. It was like in October. No one's talking about the WNBA then, and they changed the rule. So this is going to get changed immediately if one of those teams get upset.
I don't understand why it can't just be 3 out of 5 all the way through. Just make it 3 out of 5 all the way through, man.
Just make it 3 out of 5. I know.
Yeah.
That's fine with me.
I think the issue is probably holding the venue, right? That's probably what it is, like holding the date. But, I mean, it goes back to the idea of investing in the sport. If you continuously are like, where can we cut a corner just so we can save a little money? Mm-hmm. And what happens is you have stuff like this.
It doesn't make any sense. And it is cutting corners. It's like, okay, least amount of travel. Because then if they win, they could just stay there and maybe just play their next game and we'll get a discounted rate for groups. I don't know.
It's summertime, man. What's the point of playing in the summertime if you can't lock an arena down? Oh, we can't play the playoffs here tonight because fucking equestrian is in town because we got some horses coming in. Oh, guys. Oh, AHA is doing a concert. We can't have a game. You remember that one song?
Let's go to some sad news for Jermell. The Seattle Storm eliminated the Washington Mystics behind a double-double from 41-year-old Sue Bird, the oldest player to record a WNBA double-double.
Let me stop you right there, Jason. Sue Bird can kiss my ass. Because the thing about it is, everybody's like, oh, it's Sue Bird. Her name's Sue. She's like nice. She's from Long Island. Her mom writes her like nice post-its. No, she's actually an asshole and can go to hell. Some of the most disrespectful basketball I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
She's like, she goes into like this fucking Jimmy Butler mode where she's just like, all right, I'm not even shooting today.
Mm-hmm.
And then in fucking game two, a double-double, she went like 6 for 10 from the field. And the last one, the only reason it wasn't 6 for 9 was because she shot a fucking Isaiah Thomas one-legged buzzer-beater three. They were already up 15. She was being a dickhead.
That is very Sue Bird. Ahead of Diana Taurasi and Sue Bird's last game against each other, they did this video. And that's the common misconception, that people think Sue Bird is nice and Diana Taurasi is the asshole. But they confirmed that Sue Bird is indeed the asshole and Diana Taurasi is nice.
The post game, she was killing us in transition. Pull up 3. One dribble. Pull up 19-footer. Go to the rack. Dish for the easy layup, doing whatever she wanted, ball on a string, Geppetto shit, And then in the fucking post game, she was like, you know, the Mystics are a pretty good defense when they're set. When they're set, they're hard to score against. Oh, you don't say. Oh, thanks. Thanks for the most backhanded compliment of all time, Susan.
She could go another year if she wanted.
I hope she doesn't.
She could, yeah.
I can't watch this anymore.
That was going to be my question because, like, were you going to root for the Storm? Who, now that you're Mystics, which had a great season. You guys had a wonderful, wonderful season.
It was pretty good.
EDD was looking great in the postseason, looking like her old self. But who is your alliance with now that your Mystics are out?
Oh, Vegas.
Okay.
I hope Vegas beats Seattle by 1 million points.
Yeah. New world record.
The new world record.
Deficit, a 1 million point deficit in two games. That is what I'm rooting for.
Honestly, if a team would do it, it would be Vegas. Like, they're scoring wild right now.
They're the best team, and they're also proving that Bill Laimbeer wasn't the best coach.
Mm-hmm.
And when he won when he was with Detroit, I think it was a different league. So playing with that 80s NBA mentality made more sense because the game was slower. But coming to Vegas, it was between trying to go through Cambage or not letting Asia Wilson shoot threes ever.
As a team, they were the last in threes, and they were one of the slowest teams when Bill Laimbeer was the coach. And if there's a theme here, maybe former NBA players should not coach in the WNBA.
Yeah,
especially
maybe.
Not now. It's a different league, man. We're playing for, as soon as Becky Hammon comes in, she's just like, look, we're shooting it. Actually, excuse me, she's coming with the new NBA mentality, and they look fantastic.
WNBA record 23 three-pointers versus the Mercury. What has Becky come in and how has she transformed this team?
Well, aside from wearing suit jackets with the hoodie.
Oh,
like,
my God, they're so bad. They are so bad.
That's her brand,
the
though.
Worst part is that she did it. Everyone, I don't know if we made fun of her for it, but we were like, Becky, what are you doing? And then now all the assistants match her every game.
Everyone looks like Miles Morales.
It's business in the front, sports in the back. You know what I mean?
Really don't like it.
They got to win, because if they don't win.
That I will write 2,000 words on why that was the reason they lost. If they don't win.
Oh, man. I think her relationship with Kelsey Plum is a big difference in the team as well.
I would also say with Chelsea Gray, too. Really allowing Chelsea Gray, one of the best point guards in the W, and one of the best of all time when it's all said and done, to be able to just have the freedom to be like, I have a point guard, fellow point guard in my corner. And they talk about their relationship all the time. Becky Hammon doesn't really coach her. She's like, I let you run the offense as long as we are getting the quickest, best shot. That's what I want. And it seems like everyone is flourishing with the trust that Becky seems to have in the players.
Less stress on Asia, too, it seems like.
Yeah.
You know?
Can we get some predictions? Let's get some predictions going here. Thoughts. Obviously, this week we've got Sky looking to continue to assert themselves versus my New York Liberty after, again, a historic crushing of the Liberty's spirit, soul, and body. Very tough to watch. And then, of course, Suns Wings Game 3 on Wednesday.
Well, I'm picking New York off rip just because I picked them already. It's already on wax. I already tweeted it. So I'm going to just stay down. I mean, you don't know why? Because I believe in Natasha Howard and Benaja Laney over all else. And then you've got Sabrina willing to pass it to both of them whenever necessary. I'm rolling with the home team.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a good one. I want to believe that the Chicago Sky will win, but we have to go back to game one with that incredible Marin Johannes over the head, no look pass. They did not score a point after that pass for 3 minutes at the end of the game. So if she does anything, if she just closes her eyes on a free throw or something, they won't score for a whole half, maybe. I don't know. So I want to believe in the Sky. I feel like they've had a really great season. So I think it's going to be close. but the sky pull it out. That's my prediction.
It's fair. It's good. It could go either way. Chicago just looks bigger than them too, you know?
Yeah. Like,
there was just stretches where they're just putting the clamps. Sabrina couldn't do anything. I don't know, but I'm still rolling.
Okay. That's fair.
And then Sun Wings. Connecticut Sun, Dallas Wings.
The Miss Irrelevant pageant, I think I have to say. I mean, the winner of this, it was getting served up. Honestly, this entire side of the bracket is getting served up. The winner of the title is the winner of Vegas, Seattle.
It is. That's true.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, that's
very
legit.
True, but gosh.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean
you didn't
to do that.
Put it like that.
I forgot that this was being recorded. And y'all know I love Connecticut. Love Connecticut. But they just keep, injuries got them again. They lost their starting point guard like 2 months ago.
Yeah, ACL. Connecticut is this, you know, always the bridesmaid, never the bride. As soon as the bright lights come on, they just fold. And that's exactly what we saw in game two in Dallas. I just looked up and they were wiping the floor with this Connecticut Sun team. But they did have a little bit of a comeback. They were down 30. They cut it to 9, I think, within like they just ran out of time in that game. If there was more time, I think they would have come back and won. So if they build off of that momentum, I think Connecticut shows that they are the dominant team. Alyssa Thomas just yells at everyone every time they try to come into the paint because she's so scary. And that would work. I think that's the defensive scheme that they go with.
Just get screamed on.
I would run so far away. If Alyssa Thomas was coming near me, I would just run out of the arena. I'd be like, you win. You win it all. She's ferocious in that just way.
middle school bully vibes.
Jordan, earlier in the pod, Jamel and I tried to indoctrinate you into choosing an EPL team. So let me switch the question around. WNBA playoffs are cooking right now. We're getting the closing act of Sue Bird's legendary career. You have the Las Vegas Aces, one of the most star-studded and talented teams we've seen in a while. What is, if people were like, God, it seems like a good time to get on right now, who do I throw my allegiance to? Who should people throw their allegiance to?
I think you hop on the bandwagon with the Aces. It's almost full. But you can make some room, make some room on the bandwagon. You are going to have a great time watching the Aces. And this Aces Storm series is, you know, it has the star power with Asia Wilson, who was my MVP of this season. You have Sue Bird, you have Breonna Stewart, you have Tina Charles on Seattle Storm. But you're going to see why the Aces are still the better team. But it's going to be fun. Like, you've never watched WNBA basketball before in your life. Tune in. I think the first game is on Sunday of that semifinals matchup. You got to root for the Aces. They're black and red. It's a casino theme. They have a bunny as a mascot. It's just a good time.
And the owner looks crazy as hell.
Jordan, thank you so much. Jamel, it was great to have you. And now Andrew Beaton of the Wall Street Journal.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.
Welcome back to our studio where we have a special guest with us today, Toucan Sam from Fruit Loops. Toucan Sam, welcome.
It's my pleasure to be here. Oh, and it's Fruit Loops, just so you know.
Fruit?
Fruit.
Yeah, fruit.
No, it's Fruit Loops. The same way you say studio.
That's not how we say it.
Fruit Loops, find the loopy side.
Here you are, BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy.
And your plants do too. Aww. I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.
On Thursday of last week, the NFL came to an official decision on punishments for Deshaun Watson, the Cleveland Browns quarterback, who is the focus of several dozen sexual assault cases brought against him in recent years. When the NFL appealed the ruling made by former federal judge Sue L. Robinson, who initially suggested a 6-game suspension, the assumption was that Goodell was going to push for a year-long suspension. Here to discuss this and any of the latest developments in this case is Andrew Beaton of The Wall Street Journal. Andrew, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Andrew, based on your reporting, can you take us through how the NFL arrived at this decision, 11 games and a $5 million fine for Deshaun Watson?
Well, to take it back to the beginning, the NFL wanted to suspend him indefinitely for a period of time that would be no shorter than one season. But, you know, one of the quirks of the new collective bargaining agreement, and this was actually the first real personal conduct case under it, was that the initial decision didn't land on Roger Goodell's desk. This first went to an independent arbitrator who's mutually picked by the NFL and the NFL Players Association. And what she found is, yes, she concluded Deshaun Watson engaged in behavior that she described as predatory and egregious. But she also found that based on the past precedent from NFL suspensions that this merited a 6-game ban. Mm-hmm. That obviously led to a lot of outcries. You know, this was a really high-profile player who was accused of numerous incidents of misconduct. And I think one of the things that added an extra level of stink to the situation to a lot of the people was that in some ways it seemed like he was rewarded for it. He was able to get the trade that he wanted. He got a groundbreaking 5-year, $230 million contract from the Browns. And that contract also was structured in a way so that if he was suspended for part of the year, he'd basically pay no financial penalty. And so it seemed like, all right, this guy got the trade he wanted, he got the money he wanted, and a pretty short suspension. But the NFL had the right to appeal that suspension, and under the way that appeal works, they were able to put the thumb on the scales as much as they wanted, because Goodell could hear the appeal himself, or he could handpick someone. He handpicked Peter Harvey, who is a former attorney general from New Jersey, very credible, and that sort of set the stage for, all right, the NFL handpicked this guy. Mm-hmm. They can probably get what they want, which is the year-long deal. But that is also going to be kind of ugly for the league, because then the league is sort of going above and beyond the process and obviously tilting the scales. And, you know, it could have led to a lawsuit and this whole thing lasting way longer. Or, you know, we've seen guys ranging from Tom Brady to Ezekiel Elliott at least try in the courts to get these things overturned. And even if it doesn't work, it makes these things last much longer and get much uglier. And so eventually, you know, we were all expecting that decision to come in, but there was increased chatter that maybe is beneficial for both sides to get in for a settlement. And that's what they did. And so the NFL didn't get what it wanted in terms of the year-long suspension. It was still a longer suspension than they originally got from the arbitrator. And sort of like any settlement, both sides probably leave it a little bit unhappy.
Yeah, I guess that was going to be my next question. What has been the reaction to this decision? It is five extra games and a fine on top of the original one. But does that achieve the NFL's goal, or does it still fall short in public opinion? Because you guys couldn't hear my eyes rolling as you were talking, but they were very loud.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of both, right? You know, there is some credit or, you know, progress for the NFL in that they were able to get a longer suspension, which has implications not just on this case, but ones going forward. Because as the arbitrator initially ruled, the length she decided was based on precedent, Now those goalposts have moved. This is a longer suspension than has been handed out in the past. So the NFL was able to successfully move those goalposts. But on the other hand, there's a lot of people who look at the breadth of the allegations and also the tone Deshaun Watson has struck, especially in the days since, and say, you know, it feels like this should have been longer.
Let's talk about precedent as the kind of, you know, standard by which Judge Sue Robinson made her ruling. It's like, if we go to the moon and I steal your wallet on the moon, and then you're talking to me about precedent, but we're in like, we're on the moon. We're in, you know, new territory here. We're talking like dozens of victims, 24 civil lawsuits, one of which is still active, horrendous allegations. How, it seems weird to me to land on precedent as a basis for making a judgment when we're talking about a case here that is horrifyingly unique.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that the NFL and I think the sports world in general has had to reckon with in terms of precedent is that I think the world in it's not going to shock anybody to say that the world in 2022 is a lot different than it was in 2015, 2010, 2005, go on and so forth. And so there's a lot more cultural sensitivities to these issues, a lot more understanding of the importance of taking these things extremely seriously. One of the things that's really thorny is that there have been these precedents. There are these collectively bargained agreements, but we also know that the times are changing and they have changed. And we're looking at a world where Major League Baseball has tried to suspend Trevor Bauer for 2 years, right? This is a different landscape than when players such as, say, Ben Roethlisberger got pretty short suspensions for pretty ugly allegations. And when people say, well, this is what a guy like Ben Roethlisberger got years ago, I think if the same case were handled in 2022, we'd all be expecting a much longer ban.
And yes. I think we think of the NFL. We just think of the league. As I know personally, I'm not a huge fan of the NFL because of this system that continues over and over to not really punish men for disrespecting women. And I think in that sense, does the league understand the significance of the decision and the culture that is kind of allowed to exist by failing to truly punish stars for their misconduct?
You know, I think it's something that they really have started to understand, especially lately. I mean, this is a league that was pushing for an indefinite suspension for that would last no shorter than a season, you know? If you said that the NFL wanted to suspend one of its highest profile players, one of its brightest young stars indefinitely, I think a few years ago, we wouldn't have really expected that or considered that. And so there has definitely been some evolution there, but it's complicated. You know, a lot of these things, as much as it's football, also boil down to weird labor dynamics and things that, you know, we see with, I don't know, police unions or any other union in the world. These are people on the one hand who are trying to protect their workforce and what has been collectively bargained between union, you know, the workforce and management. And there's just so many different factors about who controls what. And because, you know, we can even go back in the day and when, if this were up to the league, he would have been gone for a year. But then when it was all in Roger Goodell's hands, that was a process that I think looked really heavy-handed and draconian. And so I think we're at a moment when the league definitely recognizes the importance of taking these things seriously, but it's about how to navigate these new waters.
What about the Browns, whose decision to sign Watson to a historic deal in many ways kind of crystallized the formulation that I think the NFL has kind of been built on, certainly in recent years, which is there's certain distractions that we're not going to stand for, but when it comes to, you know, acquiring players, we're just going to do it. Everything else be damned, because particularly quarterback, that's the rarest position in sports. And so we're going to do everything we can to win because we think that winning drowns out everything else. What's been the reaction to the Browns' decision and any kind of reaction within the organization regarding this ruling?
You know, I think from the people outside looking in, there's been a lot of eye rolling because there was that sense that they rewarded him for this entire situation by trading for him, by giving him that contract. But I think one of the things that is so queasy about this situation and others is it's not difficult to look at these teams and see how in a weird terrible stomach turning way, they can profit off the inefficiency that comes with the stink mm-hmm. of these situations. You know, oh, they're able to get Deshaun Watson, a player who might not otherwise be available in a situation like this. You know, there are players like Tyreek Hill, who was an absolutely fantastic player, but fell in the NFL draft because of what he was accused of in college. And then all of a sudden the Chiefs are the team that's willing to take him late, and they get a player who's one of the best receivers in the NFL. Then that stink fades, and they're able to trade him for a lot to the Miami Dolphins after winning a Super Bowl with him. And there's these situations where teams are able to, if they have a strong enough stomach to endure the backlash and maybe get through the backlash to the point where maybe they hope their fans just care about the points on the scoreboard, that this can be, as crazy as it sounds, something you think about in team building.
Yeah, I want to touch on that more too, because the fans, because I don't think there's a coincidence that the first game back for Watson is against his former team, the Houston Texans, on December 4th. Will Cleveland Brown fans kind of welcome him back on the field with open arms, or will the public remember why he missed those first 11 games in the first place? What do you think the fans will kind of react when he comes back?
I think it'll be a pretty mixed reaction at first. You know, I've definitely talked to Browns fans who have said, I don't know how I can turn on the game and feel good about it this year when he's back. I've heard from, but it doesn't take long searching on Twitter to find some Browns fans. And this is a fan base that is tired of losing. It doesn't take a lot of searching to find it. Like, oh, this, you know, innocent till proven guilty. You get a lot of breathless arguments about that. And so I think it'll be pretty mixed at first, but I think the interesting thing will be to see not what the reaction is on day one or day two, but if and when this team is in a playoff game with Deshaun Watson and he's playing as well as we've seen him play in the past, does that convert a lot of the people who just throw up their arms and say, boy, it's been a long time since the Browns were winning and this is awesome? I mean, we've seen in the past how people can get over these things and just start watching what's on the field. And I wouldn't be shocked if, whether it's this year or next year or years after that, if he plays well enough that he helps make people forget.
Let's zoom out for a second. The NFL has endured many, many crises over the last decade and a half, including the numerous incidents related to various star players, including the various effects of their covering up of the concussion crisis within the sport. And yet this is a league that is marching on to immense success. We're coming off of what was, I think you could say, the most entertaining postseason, like certainly in memory, that the NFL has had recently. This is a sport that whenever their next contract comes up, it's going to be in the multiple billions of dollars. I guess what I'm saying is, how have they managed to just kind of like roll over all of these things? You know, even something like concussions, which seemed existential for a while. You know, not in the sense that, oh, the league is done, but in the sense that, oh, in 10, 20 years, 15 years, you'll see support fade. You'll see that pipeline kind of slow as parents decline to put their kids into peewee football, et cetera. That seemed existential. And now it's kind of a thing that you know about that you just kind of move on past. How has the league managed to do this?
I mean, I think more than any year, 2022 has crystallized that, right? I mean, just take everything that's gone on since we last saw a competitive, meaningful NFL game, right? We've had one owner to have to testify in front of Congress. We've had to have the commissioner testify in front of Congress. We've had another owner, Stephen Ross, suspended by the league because of tampering with none other than Tom Brady. Then we have this entire Deshaun Watson saga playing over the course of days, weeks, and months. And so it seems like there's more going on off the field that would explode your head than ever. On the other hand, as you said, these last playoffs were thrilling. I mean, it's not hard to turn onto a game and be obsessed with a new quarterback and player. It sort of exposes the dueling tensions of football more than ever these days, because there's a lot that people should be asking serious, important questions about, but it's also really hard not to be entertained by the product that they end up putting on the field every Sunday. In a lot of ways, their strategy, which is, you know, try and get through all these crises as quick as possible, and then people on Sunday are going to return to just watching the game they love.
Exactly. That was going to be my word. Exactly. Yikes. You're not wrong.
I don't think you're, and by the way, Andrew,
you're not wrong.
You're not wrong, and I don't think the NFL is wrong either. He is Andrew Beaton of the Wall Street Journal. Andrew, as always, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Andrew.
Love being on.
Folks, that's it for us. Follow and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to check out my other crooked podcast, X-Ray Vision, where we talk about all the nerd shows and stuff going on, including the recently premiered House of the Dragon on HBO Max. Check it out. Bye. Take Line is a Crooked Media production. The show is produced by Ryan Wallerson and Zuri Irvin. Our executive producers are myself and Sandy Gerard. Engineering, editing, and sound design by the great Sarah DeWalaska and the folks at Chapter 4. And our theme music is produced by Brian Vasquez. Mia Kelman is on the Zoom for Vibes, and the Vibes are fantastic all the time.